This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What do you think of the Cubs optioning David Bodie to Class AAA Iowa to presumably make room for Steve Cishek? Does he have enough time to fix his struggles at the plate and in the field to make the playoff roster, and what is the priority?
Yeah, it's sad that David Bodie has been sent down. This is one of the great stories. I mean, this is, you know, this kid was an 18th round draft pick in 2012 who played at a, you know, went from a big school to a junior college and married his high school sweetheart. He's got three kids. The story of him driving up from Iowa, you know, coming up not knowing his car was still back at his apartment, whatever the heck it was a bizarre story. Very cute stuff. My first thought when I heard this was, thank God he signed that five-year, $12 million deal earlier in the season.
Sure, he's thinking that as well.
Well, I'm just saying, it's five-year, $15 million deal. That's enough money for a guy like him and his three kids to get him through college and to have a good, happy life. And I don't know, he really went off the boil. And I think that the fielding problems coupled with his issues at the plate, if he fixes his bat, they'll find a place for him on the playoff roster. He has options. He's going down. You know, you need Cishek. Come on. And they had to make a decision. So I hope he fixes himself enough to make the playoff roster. And if I were him, I would prioritize getting that back, the bat back to life.
What do you want me to say something on that? You want me to talk a little baseball?
You want to talk a little Bodie? What do you think?
Yeah, well,
what do you think about you made an interesting comment during the break, Dave.
I knew I was going to do this show, and I'm a big Cubs fan.
I know you.
You know, and I'm a big Joe Madden fan, and Hap is from my hometown where I'm at back there in Pittsburgh,
sure.
So I've got a little tie there, but I really watched them close against Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, knowing that I was going to do this show and knowing that I'd be talking about them right here. So I was trying to get a little bit more information than just the average fan. And, they've had a tough thing. When you look at the roster back at the World Series team, it just seemed like you knew who was going to be there. You knew the rotation of the three top big pitchers. You knew who was going to come in and close them out. I mean, you know, there was you just felt that team. And because of the injuries this year and some of the things that we're talking about and what's, you know, Ben Zobrist, I mean, all injuries and guys leaving the teams for personal reasons. And it's been tough. I can imagine what Joe's going through trying to put together a team, because it is a team game. This is not golf, you know. You got to have a team. They got to have that feel in the locker room. They've got to be trusting each other, counting on each other, gaining confidence as a team. And it's been difficult. It really has. And they've had some difficult losses. Obviously, up there at Philly, we know what happened up there. Oh. You know, some of the walk-off losses that they had were tough. But hey, I think there's a lot of baseball left, and they're still in position. I mean, all you want to be, kind of relating it to football, when you got to this point, when you get to December in the NFL, and I think it's probably this way in baseball, when you get to on end of August or September, maybe, you know, you want to be relevant. You know what I mean? You want
sure.
to be...
You want your roster healthy. You want everybody
right,
back.
Exactly.
And you want to be able to make some noise. And maybe Bodie's a part of that, and maybe he isn't. But as they get all these guys back, they're going to have some hard decisions.
Absolutely. And, that's... And Joe's been through this before. I mean, you know, he'll make good decisions, and the guy's got to play too. I mean, you know, let's not lose sight of that. The announcers the other night against they're playing Philly, and I forget who they switched pitchers. They put in a lefty, I think, and they were saying, oh, Joe's got to put somebody else in there to bat. He can't let, and the guy gets up there and gets a hit and knocks a run in. I forget who it was off the top of my head. You know what I mean? So he made the right decision, and then they lose it. You know, it's a walk-off home run, and they lose the game. Now, you want to blame that on a coach, go ahead, but players win games. You know, you got to get your team back and get them healthy.
Well, I was a little bit surprised to see that David Bote was optioned to AAA. I was a little bit surprised this year also, though, when Russell was sent down and when Almora was sent down just a few days ago. I think this year, Joe, or not only Joe, but also Theo and Jed and everybody in the organization, I think that they've had to do some things that maybe they didn't expect to do coming into the year. I don't think that in any part of their mind they expected Addison Russell and Albert Almora and David Bote to struggle so much that they would have to be option to AAA Iowa. And I know a lot of it is just kind of roster juggling, as you know, you bring guys in and off the injured list, you kind of have to shake things up a little bit, probably biding their time a little bit until rosters open up in September when they can bring everybody up. So this could be a really temporary thing for David Bote, but I wonder if this has something to do with Ben Zobrist perhaps, and maybe his availability over the next couple of weeks as he revs up his rehab assignment a little bit. Maybe they think that they will be able to rely on him in not an everyday role, but perhaps, you know, that utility role, maybe hitting at the top of the order like he is accustomed to. So I don't know if this is about David Bote, which is weird because the question itself is about David Bote, but I'm looking at it from a bigger picture here. To me, it's more about the makeup of the roster and the depth and potentially the return of Ben Zobrist.
You know, what's interesting to me, you know, from dealing with players, I would have players that you could sit down. Okay, the guy's not playing good, so you sit him down. Somewhat similar to sending him down to the minors here. And some guys would respond, you know, and boy, that would bother them, and they would come back stronger than others. Other guys were really sensitive. And if I made a decision like that, said, okay, you're out, I'm going to bring somebody else in, you got to get it together, I mean, you'd lose them.
You'd lose them.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So that's between Theo and Joe. I mean, that's part of this thing, too. And you just, you know, hope the guy goes down and responds in a positive way and comes back better than ever, and that they don't lose him, because that can happen.
Yeah, Dave, I agree with that, because we've certainly seen some special Bote moments since he's been with the Cubs. He's had some clutch big hits to win some games. There's been some pretty cool moments in this young guy's career. I mean, when you look at his numbers this season, 310 plate appearances. He's hitting, his slash line is 257, 352, 429. His OPS plus is 100. He's league average, but when you look at his numbers in August, he's batting 400. He's 8 for 20 over the course of 14 games. And who could forget the heartbreaking loss to the Phillies Thursday with that ninth inning meltdown where he had a pretty costly error there. So, I mean, if you're going to have to send someone down, it makes sense. Bote's been a serviceable infielder throughout the course of his time with the major league roster, but I mean, he's struggling right now. He is struggling. So, as Dave alluded to, hopefully he comes back and he's able to contribute more offensively. The Cubs certainly need all the help they can get. I also do wonder, as Kevbo pointed out, if this could be a corresponding thing with Ben Zobrist. But I'm not going to count on Ben Zobrist. I'm just not going to, out of sight, out of mind for Ben Zobrist until I see him on the roster. And even if we do see him in the clubhouse, I'm still not counting on him for anything. So I think this is just a move that had to be done, because you had to bring Steve Cishek back, who they need to also make a difference and be the reliable Steve Cishek of old that we hadn't seen before he was sent down.
Yeah, we're just a little more than a year removed from those heroics, that walk-off grand slam against the Nationals when his wife said she could hear the roars of Wrigley Field from their apartment that they were renting at the time. Yeah, David Bote's been a great story, and I can't wait for David Haugh to weigh in on this. That's his guy, right?
He's heartbroken. He's sick right now.
On Twitter about that. But this is all about, as Kevin pointed out, this is about roster makeup, okay? David Bote's going to go down to AAA, and he's going to get a ton of at-bats in the next 2 weeks. He's not getting a ton of at-bats right now, and they needed to add some depth to a bullpen that's been basically most of the year, okay? And you don't want to put any more stress on them than they need, so they've got a couple of extra arms, which means you get a couple of extra less bats. David Bodie will be up here on September 1st, if not before. And then, as Mully pointed out, the key question to all of this is between the David Bodies and Al Moras of the world and a couple of bullpen arms, like, who's going to be on the playoff roster, assuming there's a playoff roster to be on?
Yeah, you know, I definitely get that question.
MGM Sportsbooks in Nevada have received more Super Bowl bets on the Bears, over $1 million worth, than any other NFL team. Is that a wise wager or a sucker bet? And what does it say that the Cleveland Browns are a close second?
It tells you, I'll answer the last question first, it tells you that there are fans of these teams that are jumping on them and think they have a chance to win. To me, if Vegas is putting the odds to a point where they want you to make the bet, then it's a sucker bet. I just can't help. I can't go with the public ever if I'm making an actual wager. So I don't like this. I don't like it. I think it tells you that people bet with their heart. The big money comes in late. Follow that.
Yeah, I, you know what? You're right on. I agree with you, Mike. I mean, I think that Vegas knows how committed, how diehard the fans in Chicago and Cleveland are. And, you know, I think if they came out and said the Steelers were a team that people, they wouldn't get the reaction. You know what I mean? Because they kind of, you know, maybe expect that or something.
They've been,
you know?
Good.
Yeah.
You know, win a division. Okay?
Right.
My God.
Yeah, no, Cleveland, Pittsburgh's going to win that division, I mean, in my mind. You know, I looked at their opening game. I'm taking the Titans, I think, against Cleveland in the opener in Cleveland. I mean, where are we going, you know? I mean, what are we talking about? But they are going to be better, and I'm a big fan. I mean, I don't know the coach, but Baker Mayfield I love. But yeah, I think that Vegas is setting a lot of this stuff up to where they know that the fans are going to jump on board, and that'll happen in Chicago. There's no question about that. We saw it last year in the playoffs. Well, look at some of those point spreads last year in the playoffs, right? When they were playing the Eagles, and I talked to somebody who was a Vegas guy, and he said, "Hey, let me tell you something." He says, "That's all Chicago money." He says they're putting making the points, you know, such a big number because it's all Chicago.
I mean, listen, anytime a team has a very busy off season like the Cleveland Browns have, or if a team kind of comes out of nowhere like the Bears did last year and they look to have restocked to make another run, I think anytime a trendy team comes along like that, you're going to get a lot of money on there. And you guys are right. These are teams with big fan bases nationally. They're always going to receive a lot of bets, especially when they are kind of the hot team at the moment. Dave, I kind of agree with you. I'm not as high on the Browns as a lot of people are right now. I think, you know, Mayfield still has some things that he has to show. I don't know about the coaching staff that they have in place over there. And with Beckham, he's kind of an enigma too, as well as some of the other pieces that they have. So I'm a little bit higher on the Bears than I am for Cleveland. But I do have to say that they are probably both sucker bets. You know, nobody wants to go in there and be like, oh, give me money on the Patriots or the Saints or Philadelphia, because that's not fun. You know, you want to kind of go out on a limb to some extent, but they do say the house very rarely loses, and you got to be a real harebrained moron to bankrupt a casino or go out of business. So I think these people generally know what they're doing.
Certainly not a wise wager. You guys all nailed it. Sucker bet. Yeah, Mully, I agree. People betting with their hearts. These are fan bases that are, you know, have gone through some tough stretches and are hungry and have seen, especially with the Bears, have seen some success last season and are very optimistic, understandably so, with the defense that the Bears have. I mean, and the quarterback with some questions surrounding him, and a lot of people hoping that he takes the next step. I mean, yeah, it's a sucker bet. It is. I mean, hopefully all of these Super Bowl aspirations come to fruition. Hopefully, that would be exciting. That would be awesome. But when you're talking about putting some money down in Vegas, yeah, it's a sucker bet. The same deal with the Cleveland Browns. But I get the excitement, especially for the Browns, who, you know, now they've got a dynamic young quarterback with a personality, and then they've went and made a big move to get OBJ, another guy with an exciting personality. So I get why fans are fired up and excited, but when you're talking about spending wisely, yeah, sucker bet.
I think the sucker bet here is the Cleveland Browns, not necessarily the Chicago Bears. I mean, do you have more faith that do you believe that the Cleveland Browns in the AFC title game could beat Bill Belichick and Tom Brady? I mean, come on. Absolutely not. And again, remember, these $1 million worth of bets, there's a lot of $25 and $50 and $10 bets going on here to get to that number. I would think the Bears are a much wiser event than the Cleveland. I can't get on board with the Cleveland Browns. I just can't get on board with that. So between the two, the bigger sucker bet are the Browns. But overall, I'm not a futures player. I do like to go to the window, but I'm not a future guy at all. So all of these are kind of sucker bets to me because I like to hold on to my money till the last possible second.
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
The Bears offense ranked number 23 in the NFL last year. Where must they be this year to win the division? And will they be in the top half of the league? What about the top 10?
Yeah, I think they have to be in the top 23 to win the division. They won the division last year, if that's where they were ranked. Look, if they're in the top half in the league, they better be, okay? I think that's not asking much to make a jump to 16th, given some of the weapons they have and hopefully the development, the steady incremental progress of Mitch. Top 10? That would seemingly jump them into the Super Bowl. If that defense stays healthy.
Steady incremental progress.
Steady incremental progress. If that defense stays healthy, they're going to be a really good football team. If that defense is in the top 10, they're going to be a really good football team. If the offense got up there, that would be, I mean, now you're talking about rush to Vegas and pound them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I remember looking back at some of the statistics when I first got into the TV. I didn't look at this much. When I was coaching, but I started doing the NFL stuff at Fox, I started looking at some of the New England Patriots stats. And there were years where they were 1, 2, or 3 on offense, and they were 23, 24, 25 on defense. And, I mean, they've won Super Bowls with a big difference, separation between how good their offense was statistically at the end of the year and how good their defense was. So, to me, I think you got to look a little closer. I mean, what's the turnover margin? Now, you know what I mean? What's the turnover margin? The Patriots, the year that they won the Super Bowl and they were not statistically ranked that high, they were one of the best teams in the league in red zone scoring. You got down into the red zone.
Right.
You can move the ball from the 20 to the 20, but when you got down inside that 20, they were forcing field goals. And they were coming up with some turnovers. And the big picture, the rushing stats and all the other things that you looked at, you said, boy, they're not very good on defense. But when you got Don in there, he was forcing field goals. And then when they got the ball, they got touchdowns. So, I that's how I would look at the Bears. You know what I mean? I think that you can be – you don't have to be a top statistic team in both categories. That would be nice. But if you're not – you know, what are you doing anything to hurt the team? You know, if you're turning the ball over, if your turnover margin is bad, that's the first thing that I look at. Are you scoring in the red zone? You know what I mean? How's your third down? So you can excel at some statistics and still be a contender, even if your overall stats aren't that good. And I think the big thing with the Bears, well, we'll get into that later, you know, but that's how I would look at the ranking part right there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, what we saw from the defense last year and the fact that all these guys are in their prime and they got the whole group coming back for the most part kind of makes you confidence that they can be a top five defense once again. I think that is not a given because anything can happen, but I think that's something you can rely on more than the offense because 23rd ranking in the NFL last year, that's not exactly flattering, but there are caveats and little qualifiers you can use. You know, it was Trubisky's first year with the new offense, only his second year out of UNC where he didn't play a whole lot. A lot of new moving parts and a lot of terminology maybe that he had to catch up with and get up to speed with. But all of that now is out the window in the third season here, and he has to be better, period. And he doesn't have to be the MVP of the league, coach. You're right about that. It would be nice if they were a top five offense as well as a top five defense, but that's not exactly realistic to jump up from 23rd in the league to, you know, fourth or fifth. So I think, you know, I agree with you in terms of not just the hard statistics and where they end up, but what are they doing on third down? Are you taking care of the ball? You're not giving it away in the red zone. And how are you doing on special teams? Because they got a good punt team. They got some good kick returners. But, of course, we all saw what happened last year with the place kicker, and that's something they still haven't addressed either. So, you know, they're a very well-rounded team. But I think that right now, you know, saying that the offense is going to be in the top half of the league may be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, and that may be too high of an expectation to put on this offense in just year two of Matt Nagy's regime.
I agree with that because there's a lot that rests on Mitch Trubisky. Yes, the Matt Nagy system can take the Bears offense to a certain point and to a certain extent. But you know, yeah, 23rd in the NFL last year, won you the division. But the thing I'm looking at is Green Bay and a healthy Aaron Rodgers this year. And I'm, you know, you hope that the elite Bears defense can shut Aaron Rodgers and the Packers down, but a healthy Aaron Rodgers is always scary. And sure, there are questions surrounding the new coach and the dynamic between Rodgers and the new coach and all of that, but I think you're going to need more than a 23rd ranked offense potentially to win the division. Not dramatically. It all rests on Mitch Trubisky in my mind, that there's an improved offense around him. But we need to see that leap that we've been talking about all preseason and all offseason. We need to see more from Mitch Trubisky. I don't see currently that they could be in the top half of the league in terms of their offensive ranking. Definitely not the top 10. But Mitchell Trubisky, maybe he can surprise us. Maybe he can surprise us and take a huge step forward. That would be amazing.
Well, if somehow this Bears offense was ranked in the top 10, I believe that going back to the last question, that would no longer be a sucker bet for the Bears to win a Super Bowl. Okay, so if you have a top 5 defense and a top 10 offense, that probably will equal
would probably
Super Bowl.
Make them the prohibitive favorite,
right,
if
right,
that were the case.
Absolutely. to Coach's point, right? I'm with Coach. It's all about winning the turnover battle. If you are plus in the turnover battle, you win football games. It's really that simple. So Mitch's number one job is to protect that very precious football. Protect the ball. Defense, go get the ball. Offense, go score. Okay, that's the job. So a little bit higher, 15th, 18th, 23 probably won't get it done. I don't think 23 would get it done. But I think in the teens, I think that would be enough for this team to at least win the division.
You asked me that same question the other day.
No, I wasn't at your meeting.
No, I'm messing with you.
If the Bears defense experiences regression, will it be Chuck Pagano's fault? And how do they avoid regression in terms of turnovers? Is that inevitable?
Well, Chuck Pagano will be blamed. I don't know if it'll be his fault. And I think that, you know, turnovers, takeaways, let's say, that is a difficult thing to manage, to sort of duplicate from year to year. Now, Lovey did it. They did manage to get turnovers and to keep that going. I think that what's stopping Vegas from getting on board with the Bears is the idea that that they had, whatever, was it 36 takeaways last year, which is just phenomenal. But, you know, you think about it, they had 24 giveaways. They were third in the league in turnover differential with plus 12. So maybe if they limit some of the giveaways and they don't get as many takeaways, they'll still be a plus 12 or whatever it might be. They could still have a very good turnover ratios. But I get what this is about. I get the idea that people worry that there will be inevitable regression because numbers don't repeat from one year to the next on turnovers. I still think with Khalil Mack, with that pass rush, if Chuck Pagano is as aggressive as he says he wants to be, I don't know that it's inevitable. I don't know that they can't get pressure on the quarterback. When you can hit the quarterback, great things happen. When you get to the quarterback, when you rush the quarterback, great things happen. You know, when teams, it's a throwing league, and if you get your strip sacks, if you find a way to force a bad throw and get an interception, that's where all this stuff comes from. So I think being more aggressive might actually work out for them. I don't believe for a minute that it's inevitable that the takeaways go down.
Yeah, you know, we talked about Chuck. We'll talk about him more. I mean, I know Chuck real well. He worked with me at USC and with me at Miami. And Chuck, you know, his pressure package stuff, that's all the Rex Ryan stuff when he was at Baltimore. So we're definitely going to see more of that. I think this could be the best job in the world for Chuck. It could be the worst,
yeah.
Mike, like you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a great year, and I think Chuck will probably be a head coach in the NFL next year. And that I really believe that. He was close this year to getting a couple jobs. So I think it's going to work out good for him. But the turnover thing, think of – and this is a coach's perspective, and Bears fans aren't going to want to hear this, but I'm watching that preseason game last week against the Giants, and somebody said, what'd you think? And I said, God, thank God that they got the interception, you know, in the end zone, and thank God they had the strip fumble that they got when they were when the Giants were coming out. I says, this game could have been 50. Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the reality was, thank God the defense came up. Now, the offense protected the ball well, and they did in the defense, you know. So the turnovers, I guess I'm just – and it comes – and they're going to get turnovers. And someone mentioned about Lovie Smith that the Bears did it.
Yep.
A quick 30-second story here. You know, when I was at Oklahoma State with Jimmy Johnson, you know, we had come from Pittsburgh with Hugh Green and Ricky Jackson. We had some good players, you know, and we have a lot of turnovers. So we go to Oklahoma State, and we're doing those same darn drills, and we couldn't get a turnover if we gave somebody money. If we would have given Billy Sims money at Oklahoma, he wouldn't have given us the ball, okay? and so then I leave Oklahoma State, and I go to USC, and we got Joey Briner and Jack Del Rio and Dwayne Bickett, and all of a sudden,
turnover,
we're doing the
avalanche.
Same drills again. And I call him Jimmy because we were separated for 1 year. I call him at Oklahoma State. I said, you know those drills we're doing? We got like 4 turnovers last game, you know? Guys run faster. Guys are better players. Guys are better athletes. You're going to get turnovers, and the Bears got all those things.
It's great.
You know, I know we all love Vic Fangio, and he did a great job here, and he earned his job that he's got now with Denver. But Chuck Pagano, as you guys just talked about, he's not just some Johnny come lately, you know, nobody that's walking in here and taking over this defense. This guy was coaching at UFC, like you said, Dave, before I was even born. So I think that he knows what he's doing a little bit. He's been around the block a few times, and he's got a ton of talent here to work with. So I think it is entirely possible that they are going to be a top defense in this league again. I think it's possible with the ability to get to the quarterback that they have to be able to force turnovers at a similar rate as they did last year. Of course, the schedule is a little bit tougher. Teams are always going to adjust and readjust periodically from a week-to-week basis. It's all about the chess match in terms of coaching against one another. And it comes down to player performance and keeping these guys healthy, too, which they had a lot of success with last season. But, Chuck Pagano is I think it was a great hire. Like I said, he's been around a ton. He's been very successful. There's a reason that they did bring him in. And I think the defense, of all the question marks on this team, and there are quite a few, I think the defense is probably very last on that list.
It's going to be tough. You know, it could be tough to have a repeat year in terms of how good they were in turnovers. But, I mean, if any team can do it, this is an elite Bears defense. I believe they can do it. How can they avoid regression? I think it's very simple for this team. It's just stay healthy. Stay healthy, and they have a chance to be as good as they were last year. Absolutely, just stay healthy. Eddie Jackson, guys, he's not coming off injury. Khalil Mack, hopefully he could stay healthy and not miss games this year. That's all you need.
I'm going to agree with Ray there. I don't think that it's going to be Chuck Pagano that could hold back this defense. I believe it would be the health that could put them at risk. I think that the key is Chuck is known to be aggressive. We mentioned Rex Ryan. We mentioned the Ravens. I don't know that the Bears cornerbacks are necessarily built to take on that one-on-one and cover that way. So that might not be the way to go. And if he's too aggressive, they could get burned. But I think he'd also be willing to change the approach if that were the case. Listen, I think, you know, Chuck's going to get paid every other week and maybe he gets another job. But I think if the defense goes backwards, it's all Chuck's fault. And if the defense is as good as it was last year, well, Chuck had nothing to do with it. It's about the players. So I think Chuck's in a no-win situation from that standpoint.
Jeez.
It's tough.
I need a coffee on that one.
Call your friend.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Coffee does sound like a good idea. Ivan Nova said if he has the opportunity to return to the White Sox, he would. Should he be brought back, or is that not ambitious enough for your taste?
Oh, boy. You know, I like Ivan Nova. This is what I thought they were getting when they got him. And, you know, you always worry when a guy, after everything seems to have fallen apart, when he finally gets his act together and he's playing for a contract. But I like what I've seen with him. The best story I read was the idea that he's giving $300 to Ronaldo Lopez for every interview he does in English, and Ronaldo has to give him $100 back if he does it in all Spanish. So I like that he's working with the young pitchers and all that stuff. Look, the Sox haven't brought in anyone. You know, go out and get Gerrit Cole and then take a few dollars and throw him at Ivan Nova. That wouldn't bother me at all. Go ahead and go for it next year. Make sure you get into the playoffs. Make a big move. Why should they be limited to one move?
Is he in the contract year?
Yeah.
Mike? Oh, he is, yeah. Yeah, that's a great motivator. You hate to say that, but when I was a head coach, I always loved having players that were in contract years,
sure.
You know, because you knew that you were going to get
the best,
as good an effort, whatever that is. Now the decision for the Sox management, as I would see it, is this a guy that if you do make the commitment and give him the money, is he going to show up? You know what I mean?
Give him another one-year deal.
Yeah, or give him, there you go. I mean,
with the team option for the second year.
Jeez, you're tough. You're tough. You're tough, Mike. That's all I got on that one, yeah.
Listen, I would love for Gerrit Cole to sign here in this upcoming offseason. I don't see it happening. One, every team in baseball is going to be bidding for Gerrit Cole. Every team is going to want to add him to the top of their rotation. He's having a Cy Young caliber season. He's, I think, 30 years old, so he's right at that spot where he's established. He's not really injury prone. You kind of know what you're going to get from him. I don't think the White Sox, especially given their recent history with free agents, are going to be able to coerce him into signing here. So I think that's off the table. That being said, you've got Giolito coming back next year. You've got Lopez. You've got Cease. You've got Kopech. You're going to have maybe a half a season of Carlos Rodon. You're going to need somebody in the back end of that rotation to fill innings, to make 25 to 30 starts a year and kind of be a utility swing man, you know, that they don't really have right now. And I think Nova can be that guy. Maybe it's unambitious. It's not a sexy move. And I know the cesspool that is White Sox Twitter has already started to pile on the prospect of bringing back Ivan Nova. But I don't think it's the worst thing in the world if you bring him back on a 1 or 2 year deal. He's a professional. The way that he's performed in the second half here this season, I think, shows that he does still have a lot left in the tank. So I would be in favor of bringing him back at the worst for injury insurance, number five, number six starter, swingman type guy.
This is certainly for Nova one of the great turnarounds that we've seen just in baseball in general in the second half of the season. It's pretty great. Yeah, I agree with the idea of you need a guy at the back end of your rotation, especially with the fact that Rodon, you know, is going to be back later in the season next season, hopefully. So yeah, bring him back. Ambitious enough for my taste.
He's 32. He's not 38.
You know, Dave, you made a great point about players in their contract year, but he's been in the contract year the whole time. Like, the contract didn't just click over at the All-Star break. So maybe you wanted a little bit more. I mean, Kevin laid out what the Sox rotation could look like without Nova. So at the end of it, it's all going to be about cost, right? How much is it going to cost to keep Nova around? What's his value on the open market? And then you have to make a decision. And I know they don't get Carlos back until after the All-Star break, probably, right about there. But maybe if you're not ready to win, I don't know that you should give that guy the money and think you're going to. Listen, I'd rather spend the money on a one or a two than spend money on a five or a six, as Kevin pointed out.
Yeah, I'd rather they spend the money, okay?
Spend the money, right.
Let me ask you guys
this.
I'm
the right person, right, Molly? You're frustrated.
They didn't
even
spend any money last year. They talked a big money game, but they didn't spend it.
Why would Gerrit Cole want to sign here if the Yankees are going after him, or the Nationals, the Braves, the Dodgers? I mean, teams that have a chance to play in a World Series. Why would he come here?
I'm talking about Nova.
No, but I mean, when you're talking about spending money,
yeah,
Molly,
I'd like
tongue
them to,
twister there,
yeah,
don't you want it spent on the proper person?
I think I've said this 1,000 times. They could have had Manny Machado, but they did not cough up the money that you had to get him, and they lost to a team that is in a smaller market than they are. That, you know, they're never going to be in a situation where they're bidding for another player and the Yankees and the Cubs and the Dodgers and all the big money teams are sitting
that one
out.
That was the year. You're right. That was the year. Absolutely.
So I'm not deluding myself into believing that this is sitting there for them. I'm talking about Nova. I'm saying he's 32. I mean, you're right. You need a back end of the rotation guy. What's wrong with bringing him back for another $12 million?
Where do you start? And I'm asking, Mike, where do you start at, though, with a baseball team? I mean, everyone keeps talking about, well, we got to build the club. We got to, you know
yeah,
what I mean? We got
right. Well,
I mean, it's like on football, it's easy. We got to get a quarterback
yes.
or we're not going anywhere.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And we got to get a pass rusher. Okay. You can come up with talking football.
They've got a pretty good base of players, but and they've the way they've done it is with their pitching staff.
But
we haven't seen all those guys healthy and steady and ready to go, and they need to go out and make a big time move. And I'm not deluding myself into believing they're going to get the guy, but I hope they understand if they're going to bid for him what the price of playing poker is going to be.
Yeah, absolutely, and oftentimes they're not able to sit at the big boy table.
All right. That is the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767. We have Coach Wanstead here. It's Mully and Haw on the score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.